This is Breaking Down Security, and I am Brian Brake. Welcome back, listener. This is Brian, Ms. Berlin, and Mr. Betcher for Breaking Down Security.
Yo!
Woo! What's up, man?
Yeah, it's glad everybody's back. Mr. Betcher, he had a illness in the family last week. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Had multiple illnesses.
The whole family was ill. That's what it was.
Yeah. Really? Ew. Yeah, he actually was on our pre-show, and then he was like, oh, wait, I got to go. The wife's puking. And then we were like, yeah. Oh.
Pretty much.
Gotta sit here and wait. And he's like, I kind of need to go. And I'm like, no, no problem, dude. No problem.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad.
I mean, you just keep puking. I'm going to keep recording and we'll meet in the middle sometime.
Just keep it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you stop calling Ralph so much?
Brian gets it mad when there's not good audio on there, you know? So, yeah. So
Ralph.
Yeah. That's awful. So, so yeah, we're glad to have you back. We were going to talk about some malware stuff last week, but I want to get to you on that. You are our malware correspondent in the trenches. So, it's important that we get that information from you. So, you said last week you were seeing some really interesting, credential type thefts.
Yes. It's really picked up lately. There are a lot of email accounts that are hacked out there. And if obviously people in your company deal with people in other companies, clients, partners, just sending emails back and forth between companies. And a lot of times these people correspond regularly. And when they get an email from somebody that they've corresponded with in the past and it says, hey, you know, something like, we're going to bill you guys $25. There's a $300 upcharge if you don't take care of this in the next 24 hours. Sorry for the late notice. Just things like that, links and emails. Takes you to another email account, Dropbox, like, hey, I got this document for you that you need to sign. There's VeriSign stuff.
DocuSign.
DocuSign. A lot of things that get people to visit a site and then they type in their credentials, especially if you have online email like Office 365 or whatever. It looks exactly like the Office 365 you'd log into.
Yeah.
You enter your credentials, boom, you're done.
Right.
That's it. And then once it gets inside your company, presumably they would start emailing people from in, you know, from within.
Yeah.
Right. And then emailing all your contacts or whatever. And it just spreads like viruses of the 90s, right? It just keeps going. That's something that you really need to be on top of. Otherwise, it could get out of hand quick. Another thing I saw was where someone's email would get hacked and they would send out, they would find an email thread, a previous thread that maybe wasn't responded to, and they'll respond to that thread.
Right.
With a Trojan in, you know, in inside there.
Yep.
So that was one that I hadn't seen before until recently. And it's a really good, they take the time to look at the thread and then reply all to that thread and say something like, hey, you might want to check this out.
So were they targeting anybody specifically, like salespeople, or was it like an engineer, or was it just, you know,
it wasn't targeted anybody specifically for these attempts. It was mainly just trying to get as many machines as possible, but the malware that was involved with it did a lot of recon. It figured out what domain they were attached to, figured out a little bit about the network, figured out what programs were installed on the device, whether they had an antivirus, what kind of scheduled tasks there were, what presumably whether it was a company or not, and did all that recon right away. And then there, I know there was some manual commands like about 10 minutes later because they pop calc a couple times. They tried to send emails and it wasn't, you know, the lab box I had wasn't attached to email, but you could see they tried to send emails. It was pretty good. And they use Tor as well. So you better be looking for Tor mm-hmm. traffic in your network.
But shouldn't you be just blocking
pretty much
anyway?
Shut that down. That's going to be a Sev 1.
Yeah.
That way the command and control doesn't get shut down when right. they use Tor, but it is really noisy. So it's one of those six of one, half dozen of the other. Do I really want to be super stealthy, or do I not want my command and control shut down by the authorities or whoever?
Right.
Once I'm figured out.
Okay. Hold that. Remind me of that later on during our topic, because this is going to come in handy. I mean, it actually kind of
the Tor part.
Yeah, the Tor part, and you know, doing that. So, Miss Berlin, you mentioned you're going to be giving some training for Oracle, not Oracle.
No, good lord.
Oracle will probably never be a sponsor of this show. So it's O'Reilly, right?
You're going to give some probably O'Reilly.
Well, they haven't said yes yet, but hopefully.
Well,
soon.
I'm sure they will, because you know we gave them the bump on here. So yeah,
right. Yep. That's yeah. I mean, makes all the difference.
They better, you know, better recognize. So
yeah,
they're like,
yeah.
ooh, we got to end with through Amanda.
Yeah, but it's a better version of the training I gave at their conference.
Oh right, was it the cyber killing the cyber?
Wait, what if
things?
I took that training? Are you saying it sucked?
Oh.
No, of course I not.
Got really cold. I mean, awkward in here.
So the one I got a lot of really good feedback from the people that took it. And I'm trying to use that to make it better.
You made improvements. Version 2.0, yeah. if you will.
2.0, yeah.
Right, right.
Bet you're never.
So really. this is something that I wanted to talk to you guys about. The one that I'm focusing on right now is that people, there was somebody said that my training was too Windows centric.
Right.
Okay.
That being said, I don't really
now, you're
know.
Not a Windows bigot.
No. I mean, but if you think of what the most people are worried about trying to defend against
right.
and lock down,
yeah.
it's usually Windows, right?
Well, yeah, because it's mm-hmm. it's low hanging fruit. I mean, and yeah. you know, to a lesser extent now, it's there are more Macs in the environment. So, but I mean, if you can gain a foothold, it's usually either email or something. But I mean, Macs are starting to come up too. But
but it's two usually decades. A window
to do with popularity.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, two decades.
Popularity and you know what the easiest thing is going to be to get in.
Right.
So, right. a Windows box that lets you run Java or open an HTA file or
and your local admin on your, you know,
that
Windows
your local or admin
Mac,
on
yeah. or your Mac. Yeah. Box. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I don't know. So I'm trying to think of a couple other things that aren't, cause I mention a lot of other things, mm-hmm. Like defensively to, you know, lock down or monitor or alert on or whatever, but the walkthroughs that I do are like group policy. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you can easily build a lab around.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's tons of, you know, Linux vulnerabilities out there, and I'm going to open it. Well, you know, we probably should just open it to our listeners. If you've got some thoughts on how, you know, you would cyber kill the cyber chain or whatever it is. That's what it is. It's killing the cyber chain, right?
It's kill. Yeah, yeah, okay. yeah. So it's, I want to try and put as many kind of easy fixes that apply to as many people as possible.
Right. Right.
I guess mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah.
And tie it to threats they actually worry about.
Right. Well, you yeah. know, for Linux, I mean, most people are like, oh, you know, you need to have a hardening standard. So, you know, the CIS benchmarks are a good one because those are things that all of the function, all the things that you're scanning for function as ways of people can gain access or escalate privilege. The problem is with the CIS benchmarks, and I've been talking with people at work, is anybody who logs into most Linux systems or servers, one, and two, they have sudo access. So you don't really need to escalate any privilege because most people set their sudoers files to, you know, allow you to sudo with no password. And, you know, even if you do, it's the user's password and you've got root access anyway.
That was one of the things that someone mentioned, is the fact that not a lot of people like lock down Linux as far as what groups are allowed to run what, and do like real application whitelisting on Linux. Like, yeah. Not everybody that logs into that box should be able to run a Python script.
Right. Well, yeah. That might be something I can ask Mr. Beal about. I'm going to be at HushCon tomorrow. I'm actually recording this on December 7th of 2017, and it's tomorrow, December 8th and 9th. But we're going to have some audio later in the month, probably from Jay, about, you know, this. So I can ask him those questions about, you know, what it would take to secure a Linux box. And he came on and talked about AppArmor, you know, AppArmor and mm-hmm. SE Linux, and setting up application profiles for blocking. So that might be something you want to look into as well. I mean, you know, if you want to, you know, secure your Linux environment and kill the kill chain, you know, setting up SC comp or, you know, AppArmor, SC Linux might be something you want to look into as well.
Right. It's cyber kill chain. Get it right. I got two things to say.
Intrusion. Intrusion kill chain.
Cyber intrusion. Oh, yeah.
if you're running Linux, chances are you're running some type of enterprise app or some kind of app on it. So you need to focus on application security, right?
For that system. App. Yeah.
You know, the operating system might be harder to infiltrate, but somebody can weed their way in through the applications you're running.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Oracle earlier. Make sure that sucker's patched and you've gone through a lot of testing on your database as well, and making sure that your app doesn't have SQL injection flaws, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what I talked about earlier with email accounts getting hacked, I believe that's just Linux, right?
I mean, you can...
No, it's OS agnostic. So yeah, that, you know, could apply to... Anybody can get their email hacked no matter what you're running. So, right. Yeah.
You just have to know what the payload is. If you're sending out, if you're spraying and praying, and, you know, you're going to use either, something that's going to work in a browser, like a beef hook, or you're going to put out a Windows thing, and if it doesn't work, the Mac guy's going to, oh, this just doesn't work, I'm going to forward this to my friends over in IT who have Windows boxes, or, you know, something like that. You know,
is that how they talk?
Ew, yeah.
It that's pretty close. But if my account is hacked and all I use is a Mac, the attacker can still send out Windows malware from my account.
Sure. Right. Yeah. With the address book, you can just send it out. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the topic at hand. And actually it's an excellent segue, because we've been talking about all kinds of incidents that can occur. I don't know where I found this link. To be honest, I Google a lot of things, all the time, forever.
You're their number one customer.
I am number one Googler.
I am the number one Googler of all time, probably, of things. I came across this, it was probably on Twitter. That's probably where I found it. But it's a GitHub article, and it's from a gentleman by the name of Matt Swan. Matt Swan works for, if you Google him, he's available. He's here in the Seattle area. I did not know that at the time. He's on Twitter. He's at M Swan with two N's, MSWANN MSFT. So that's pretty much a giveaway of where he works at there. So he does a lot of incident response. As a matter of fact, I'll read a little bit here. So he's leading a team of security engineers to protect customer data in various things at MSFT. Custom intrusion detection sensors, 100,000 servers. He does, you know, active graph visualization, enabling hunting, triage, and incident response. This dude is heavy into the DFIR. And he wrote this article about the hierarchy of incident response needs, which he based it off of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. For those of you who don't know what the Maslow hierarchy of needs is, it's the idea that I would imagine if the world went to complete crap, the base requirement is that you get you take care of your physical well-being and try to become, you know, what is considered self-actualized. The idea is you move up. Here, let me grab the Wikipedia article real quick here. And this would be a good time for Wikipedia to be slow on me. I gave you guys 200 damn.
Are you looking up self-actualized?
Yeah. So the first level is physiological, which is, requirements for human survival: food, shelter, clothing, air, water, clothing, shelter. Yeah. So, you know, and it builds on that. So once you've got those things, you've checked that box, you know, I've got food, I've got a roof over my head, I've got fresh water. Then you would move on to, say, safety. You want to make sure that you have some way of defending yourself or your livelihood against, you know, defending what you've gained against, you know, other things. And it goes on up and, you know, it eventually talks about love and belonging, esteem and self-actualization. That's like at the very top.
Right.
Procreation.
Yes.
The most important.
I would assume that's somewhere in the middle at love.
Somewhere in the bottom.
Yeah, you have to. Because the idea is, once you've taken care of yourself, then you try to get other people who are at that similar level, and then you start building community. And then by building community, you find value in the community that you're in, and you become, you know, self-aware and self-actualized and what have you. There's some issues with it. If you want to go and look on the Wikipedia page about the criticisms that it has. His idea was, it was taking as a rough draft of building on what you know and, you know, adding to that. So he started out with inventory, you know, and me and Ms. Berlin was talking about this before Mr. Betcher showed up late, that was a bit passive aggressive. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, just a little bit.
Minus the passive. So, much like we do with the SANS critical security controls, the first thing is know what's your environment. Have a good asset inventory, or at least, you know, understand what you have that you need to defend. And in this, his base is, you need to understand the assets that you're going to be defending. And for, you know, incident response needs, you need to know which systems are connected to one another and how everything works. So, we're going to build on that as we go along. So, the next thing is, do you have visibility across your assets? And Ms. Berlin knows a little bit about this. It's, you know, logging, right? Making sure that your events are there.
And you know what assets need to be logged, which goes back to the previous step.
Well, okay. So, all right. So what assets do you need to log?
So there's a couple different thoughts on that. I usually like to do like authentication and traffic first.
Really?
Explain. Yeah. Traffic.
Like, if you have a web proxy or like PAN logs or
radius?
ASA logs.
Like radius and stuff?
Huh?
Like Radius,
Yeah, and Radius, Active Directory, DNS is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just like to log everything and then go through and pick out, you know, individually what is important to them. But that's usually really expensive and really noisy.
Mm. Okay.
So I think going based off of what your individual risks are, whatever risks are important to you is usually the best bet.
Okay. So, you know, he mentioned, you start small and then move out instead of, you know, having the whole ocean and trying to shrink it down.
Yeah. And I mean, different people like to do either one, but yeah, I like to do.
Well, I'd imagine they have their pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to see, you know, how big this thing's going to get, right? And then trim it from there. Because it'd be nice to log a lot of things. DNS is freaking noisy.
Yeah.
Right? Can I afford, like, okay, let's do 10% right now.
DNS is really noisy.
You know, 10% out of 100%, and then do the calculation. Okay, if I can, if it's a gig for an hour, then it's going to be 10 times that. Can I afford to, you know, have that much data swamping through, what's going to happen, right?
Well, Windows, I mean, Windows logs are just as bad or worse, you know? If Windows logs be super noisy, yeah.
If only there was a tool that we had known about that would help us parse out those logs.
Oh, yeah? Like useful. What?
I don't know anything.
No, okay.
Anyway, moving along.
Well, okay, let's talk about the bottom of this pyramid, inventory. How many times do we talk about asset management?
All the time.
I mean, like all the freaking time. And how frustrating is it when you get some IP or some user and you can't, like, you have no and you're sitting there reading wiki pages and searching through your emails and you're doing, you're like, what? How in the hell do you, you're pinging the device, you're trying to figure out who owns the asset. Is this part of the such and such product, ABC?
You know,
where is this? You know, is this in our, data center in China, or is it in Brazil, or is it in Canada? Where is this?
Dude, sat right across from you from how many years doing that exact same thing with firewall rules?
Wow.
No joke.
Yeah. And then every IP you have to account for that's an internal IP. Yeah. I mean, and this is such basic stuff. But
there are
very few people who actually do this, who actually take the time to get an inventory set up.
The interesting thing is, and I wish I had gone to that AWS conference that was in Vegas last week, because I heard it was really great. There was a lot of good security talks there. The general consensus, especially if you're in large cloud environments or you're using Docker or Kubernetes or anything like that, is having an accurate CMDB is never going to happen, because you're never going to have an accurate CMDB. I mean, unless these Kubernetes or your Docker instances are phoning in to whatever it is you're getting, and it's constantly populating your CMDB for you, you can't have, you know, something that goes out every 30 minutes and goes, okay, let me see what's in my environment, or running an nmap scan, especially with things like IoT. One of the things I've learned in the past week, because I was talking to some people on Monday, is that some IoT devices that they have in their environments do like burst transmit. And otherwise, they're shut off and they don't have any network connections that go out.
Oh, yeah.
So you could do an nmap scan and find an IP address to something that 5 minutes later doesn't exist anymore. You just happened to find it when it was transmitting data out. So finding those things and keeping track of them is a pain in the ass.
And not only that, I mean, there's a lot of like really automated environments that, you know, you may have servers spin up to handle like website load whatever for load balancing. And
or additional clusters.
Once the traffic goes away,
they go away.
So,
but that's okay. They're gone.
That
right.
Exactly.
So your inventory would include a cluster, right? You don't know the size of that cluster, but at least it's cataloged. It's recorded. You know, you can find it. And it probably has an IP range if you do IP static, whatever, and it has a maximum at some point, or something should be documented to where if you do get this IP somewhere, you can tell, oh, it was part of that cluster. It's
Right.
So that's what we're talking about as far as inventory. Yeah, it may be gone now, but it was there, and you know what it was doing, why it was there, and who potentially accessed it or whatever you're looking for.
Yep. So as you get your centralized logging and your stuff, you're going to start looking at telemetry. You're going to start trying to understand, or not telemetry, but telemetry and detection. So the telemetry is, logging everything.
It's also being able to access it once you know what you're looking for, be able to actually, as a IR person, access it with admin creds or however you need.
Right.
Right. It doesn't do any good if you know where the attack is coming from or where the attack is centered upon if you can't even get access for another 12 hours.
Right.
Right.
Right. You have to plan ahead of time.
Yeah.
You have to have a plan to get access to and potentially shut down those resources.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, if you don't have access to that, the detection part, you know, you won't be able to detect unauthorized activity. I mean, at that point with detection, you should have like a dedicated SOC or some analysts who are, you know, have IR under their belt that are looking at logs or looking at things that are being flagged. Cause that's one of the things you have to, you know, Ms. Berlin's catching all the logs or, you know, setting up the logs. And, you know, Mr. Betcher's got his log MD stuff that he uses to pare down his logs to something that's useful. That aids in the detection because like Mr. Betcher says that there's certain Windows codes and well, Mr. Goff says it too, but he's kind of a thing.
I actually sent his stuff to one of my customers the other day.
Nice. Okay. So, but I mean, you guys are paring down the noise and getting the necessary bits that will help you detect odd activity, not necessarily just unauthorized activity, stuff that's out of the ordinary, whether it be...
Let's focus on that for a while. I mean, if you have the opportunity to have pen testers in your environment, make sure that you communicate with them and say, okay, what are you doing? Make sure you can detect what they're doing. And if you can't, ask them, like, how do I detect this? Maybe they don't know the answer, but you can ask them to kind of summarize what they're doing.
Yeah.
Make sure you're logging those things and that you can detect it. I mean, you kind of have to run scenarios in your head to be able to say, okay, if this box got hacked in some way and they pivoted to the domain controller, how would I detect that? Am I getting the right logs? Am I running the right queries to alert myself to that fact?
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, when you find the detection and you know that you've got pen testers in your environment, let them know immediately. Don't wait until the reveal and they go, oh yeah, we found that. Cause then nobody believes you. So tell them as soon as you found out so that they can put that in the report. It looks better for the SOC to say, yeah, you know, the pen test would be, yeah, we were detected within 5 minutes of this, or we weren't detected at all. And you'll be like, oh crap.
Most pen testers love to put that in the report because they rarely see it.
That's right.
Right. Tell me when you detect me so I can document that. Impresses me, and my report looks better to, you know, the pen tester's report looks better to the company that they're pen testing for.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they can say, look, you guys did real shitty here, but in this area you did really well and Bob found me and kudos to Bob.
Well, there went our pod safe rating. Anyway, so that makes perfect sense. So after you've got your detection, let's say it's not necessarily a pen tester. Let's say you've got an email and somebody's, you know, you've got your logs from a host user and you see that he's clicked on a, you know, a link. Well, it won't show that he's clicked on a link because that's innocuous. That's an event. What you're going to see is that all of a sudden Internet Explorer is opening command.exe. That is not a normal event, and that should be flagged. I would imagine, Mr. Betcher, your stuff would definitely flag upon that.
It better. It better. It helps to test that every once in a while.
It does too, help to test.
And that's why we get some cool attacks, right, that we're aware of. And we kick them off, right, in a controlled environment. And then we make sure that we can alert,
right,
that we get the alerts
right
from that controlled environment, right?
Right.
And then we apply that to the enterprise.
Yep. So one of the things that I find interesting is he's on the page, if you go to it, he split this up into two things. So he's got like the first tier, the second tier, and the third tier. The triage is where you decide, okay, can you classify these things? So that decides whether or not it's a real event, which if you've done all of your necessary log analysis and you've pruned your logs to the point where you're only pulling things that are like very interesting and not just, you know, regular random noise, you can actually triage it to whether or not it's a non-event, something interesting, or something that's definitely a bad thing and you probably should roll your IR. He has that down at the bottom. He says, I detect hygiene issues and operator activity that does not follow best practices. So that's like the first four levels, inventory, telemetry, detection, and triage.
Right.
For the next three, which is threats. And we talked about this before. I said, well, the way he's making it sound is like you're like a groundhog and you're down in your hole and you know, are filling your basic needs. And now you've stuck your head out into the greater world and you're like, okay, now who would want to attack us? Who would want to use these tactics that we're seeing in our logs against us? And when you get to that point, you're starting to talk about like threat intelligence and, you know, understanding tactics, techniques, and what is that? TTPs, tactics, techniques, and
procedures.
Procedures. That's it. Yeah. you know, you're looking at, you know, what the capabilities of those people are. Why would these people want to hit you? Those kinds of things. And that would be where you would subscribe to Intel feeds, or you'd be on Twitter looking at, you know, people posting things. so, I mean, are there any other ways to, you know, get that kind of information about your adversaries other than going to the threat intelligence companies of the world?
I really don't like that one.
How come?
Because it asks, I mean, the first question is, who are your adversaries? Well,
everybody.
I mean, pretty much everybody. Why are you worried about that? What are their capabilities? Well, it could be a skitty and it could be a freaking awesome hacker. I mean, it could be 1 hour you're getting a skitty and the next hour it's a hacker and, you know, like a real black hat. Why even ask that question?
Okay. Well, okay. So in the second level on the other document, he's like, the statement is, when my red team emulates a real world adversary, I detect their intrusion at multiple points along the kill chain. Oh, she perked up. She looked at the screen when I saw it. She was like, oh. Okay. So, I guess at that point, if you're at like level 5, which is the threats level, you're probably a mature enough organization that you are doing red teaming and pen testing on a semi-regular basis. You might even have an internal red team that's doing these things for you. So, your red team, yeah, and you're going to be, you know, your IR team is probably going to be talking to your red team, when they're doing exercises, and your red team needs to know, well, what makes sense for us to do. If you're a retail organization, you know, you're going to be checking your point of sale transactions, your point of sale terminals or whatever. You're not necessarily going to be going and looking at web, you know, unless you have a web front end. You know, you're going to be looking at stuff that adversaries are going to want to attack. You're not going to be wanting to, like, you know.
By the way, when we say red team, most people probably don't have red teams in their company. We're talking about you. Okay. We're talking about, you thinking about the types of attacks that could happen to your environment.
Okay.
And creating alerts based on the other stuff, right? Triage, right. Detection, telemetry, all that.
Right.
Creating for yourself alerts for yourself when certain events happen. Okay. We can all spend an hour and read how to use Mimikatz,
right?
And, you know, try that out. Can I detect Mimikatz in my environment?
Yep.
Boom. Okay. That's your red teaming. You're doing it yourself. You're learning about red teaming also in these particular attacks. And you're also, massaging or adjusting your defenses to be able to detect certain attacks that are common.
Right. Yeah, and I can probably reverse myself a little bit there. Threats could also be doing threat modeling. You know, you have an application that you're going to do threat modeling on, or you could do a network threat model. You know, you could do threat models on a brand new system that you just stood up to find out, you know, one, how it's connected to everything. And then, you know, you could have your red team, you know, okay, these are the things that we think are important. You know, we need to check authentication. We need to check, you know, encryption levels. We need to check those things, go at it and see if you can attack those. So,
I mean, and there's like ISACAs and stuff like that are industry specific.
Right. Right.
ISACs and research, and, I guess.
Yeah. There's data sharing. Yeah. That, organizations. The thing is, though, he actually puts those close. If I read this right, he's put the ISACs and the certs and all those at the very top of the triangle that, you know, cause you're sharing back with those things. But, you know, you could also probably use like the RSISC, you know, when Brian Engel was there, he came and talked to us about information sharing across our, you know, across the community, or, you might have, a specific organization locally that you can go to, like Chamber of Commerce. If, you know, there was an open sharing kind of forum there where you can go and talk about what's going on locally or in specific groups. So
I wonder how many Chamber of Commerces actually do that.
And zero. So once you know what your adversaries are, and that's the idea is that once you figure out who your adversaries are and what their capabilities might be, now you need to know if you can detect them in your environment. So if they're going for, you know, database credentials, if you're running a forum and you notice a lot of database connections, you know, you need to know if you can detect that. And then again, that's where your pen testing, your third party pen tests, your red teamers, your internal red teaming. I know, Mr. Betcher, big companies have internal red teams. I have seen them. I have met them. They're scary, very, very scary people. But yeah, they can actually, you know, help you by emulating those behaviors, which makes complete sense. So,
and they shouldn't be working in a bubble.
Right.
That too.
They should be sitting right beside you, working right alongside you.
Oh yeah. I mean, they'll be along to help you. I mean, I would hope that they're helping you with incident response. Cause you know, if they are attacking, they should also know how to defend those things or help you shore up those defenses if that's the case. So hunting. So let's say that, you know, you've got a SOC team that, you know, has all of these things and you're, you know, you've got your red team in there, your pen testers in there looking at adversary activity. If they're not doing anything and you know they're not doing an exercise, can you detect whether or not, you know, the bad guys are actually in your environment? Or they're already in there. Maybe, you know, I mean, how many stories have we heard of where people say, yeah, we went in to pen test this company and we found, you know, port 4444 all over the environment. You know, obviously those companies weren't mature enough to detect 4444 running in their environment. But you know, they bring in a company that can detect that for them and they find, you know, that, you know, they have now been detected. The office recognizes Mr. Betcher.
What's 4444?
Oh, I'm sorry. So port 4444 is like the default port for a meterpreter shell.
Ah, okay.
So when you create a meterpreter or in Metasploit or whatever, the default, and God help me if I'm wrong, because
we're going to have hate. Well, you'll have hate mail.
Yeah. Send your hate mail to bdspodcast.podcast@gmail.com. But the default port for that is listening. Whenever you gain a shell on that, it opens on port 4444. And then you're supposed to open Netcat on your local box, and it's supposed to shove that shell back to you normally. So, so the last and the very tippy top of the triangle is, you know, where you're supposed to be like all badass and stuff. And it's saying during incident response, I operate in the same tempo as the adversary to protect my business assets. So basically if you can get up that high, the idea is that you're detecting him in real time and, you know, you're tracking him. So you're able to go, well, okay, I can see this guy, this jackass over here clicked on the link and I can see the shells dropping back, you know, and that requires things like, you know, advanced network monitoring. You know, your logs are in real time being, you know, poking out. Oh yeah. Okay. I see. Yep. There he goes right there. There he's opening this server, you know, and I don't know, maybe at that point it's almost, you're getting excited or are you feeling detached from the scenario, you know, at that point? Cause you're like, well, how far do you want to let him go before you actually stop him? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I've had, I've had people I guess that depends on how good your internal is, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it takes a really...
You'd be playing with matches at that point.
You are. Yeah. Well, you're playing with fire at that point, you know? And you're going to have...
I've had people specify in their play, their run books, when, what conditions have to be met before they, turn off all of their internet.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Big mm-hmm. companies too. And yeah. Or call on third party, or at what point do they try and interfere?
Huh? So they actually would let the guy play around, or the guy, I got mad at this earlier because it was he and his, but they let the hacker,
you're doing it.
I know. Right. They let the hacker run around inside the network. And as long as they're watching it,
yeah, they would rather watch
the fire, if you will.
Yep. Yeah, they would rather watch it than plug one hole when he has five other open somewhere else.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Until they would have to have a certain amount of confidence that they know exactly how they're gonna stop it before they do anything,
yeah.
As opposed to just freaking out and killing that connection, and then the hacker knows that they know.
Right.
And they'll end up being more stealthy or whatever.
Yeah, and they let the mouse run around inside the maze, which is the tracking mm-hmm. part. So during an intrusion, right. Can you observe adversary activity in real time? So the next level just before the very top is acting. Can you deploy proven countermeasures to evict and recover? And that's the point where, it's do you direct him to a honeypot or something, or use technology tar pits where, he's trying to spider a website and you turn on the technology and it just takes him forever to download the same stuff. And,
right.
Or a zip bomb. Exactly. Those are very effective from what I understand. Or, there's offensive countermeasures what John Strand and them have that, will help you out with that. Not hacking back, but helping you understand who your attacker is.
I was just talking about those today.
Right. I find that there are probably a lot of companies that go, oh man, that's so cool, I want to put those in. And either they don't implement them correctly, or
they're not looking at the pyramid.
Right.
Right. So if you try to implement these advanced tools, your pyramid is upside down at that point.
Right.
Right.
And, yeah. That doesn't work.
You have to have that good foundation, which is why it's a pyramid.
Yep. I mean, and the thing is though, the stuff from about 1 to 5 is boring. It really is. No. And I don't mean that in a negative. Well, I kind of do, but it's the stuff that's not fun for people. We don't want to, worry about asset inventory and setting up logs.
It isn't
fun
at all.
And it's not fun, but it's necessary to build a proper foundation of security in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't get a promotion because, I set up a great inventory.
Exactly.
You should, because it's difficult.
Yeah. Oh, look, I pruned all the logs properly. Give me monies, that kind of thing. So, yeah. So at the very tippy top of the capstone of the pyramid is there's actually no word for it, but it says, can you collaborate with trusted partners to disrupt adversary campaigns? And this is the thing we were talking about with the CISC and information sharing with other people in your industry vertical. At that point, your CISO is saying, with his other CISOs at his other retail firms, hey, we noticed this activity. And like we had with Brian Engel when he was on talking about the retail CISC, they, take all the information from various people in the industry verticals like retail, in this case, they anonymize it so that you can't tell that, hey, Target's been breached again. They haven't been breached. They haven't been breached again. It's just, that's the information that, hit me. These were the things that was found, the TTPs. And this is what, Walmart would use to, shore up their environment to make sure that if it was a widespread event that they wouldn't get hit with it as well. And that would be the, there's other things, there's other little parts or little, you know, limbs going off of this that I can see where you'd have to discuss things like breach notification. Cause even if you are tracking the adversary in your environment, you're running into things like, well, when now we need to release, you know, find out what the damage is, you know, pulling that plug before it gets too bad. We still have to let people know, you know, finance needs to know to put it in their 10K filings if they're public, those kinds of things. So, I mean, but for incident response needs, your bailiwick is what's on the triangle, and you have to interface with other folks in your lessons learned and whatevers. So, all right. Well, I really enjoyed this. I'm actually going to try to reach out to Matt and see if he can maybe come to CSEC East meetup or something and you know, pick his brain about this. I actually did connect to him on LinkedIn and said, hey, we had a podcast about your hierarchy of needs. Unfortunately, you work for that company and their PR company is really crappy to get through. So I'm sorry, but we'll definitely give you all props for this. So this was all his thing. We just kind of went through it. So is there anything else we want to talk about or anything we can discuss or points that I might have missed on the pyramid?
You told me to bring up the email stuff again.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Oh, right. About Tor. Something about Tor.
Yeah. So, right? Yeah. Detection in your environment. So maybe Tor is an unauthorized activity in your environment. You're not going to know those things unless you have visibility across your assets that, you know, Bob over in accounting just learned about Tor and he thinks it's a cool way of getting out and, you know, getting onto his dark market stuff.
Well, I had customers say that they wanted to alert on all Tor traffic, but they weren't sure exactly who was allowed to access it.
How about starting with nobody and then moving up that chain?
No, because they wanted to make sure their intellectual property wasn't on there.
Oh, okay.
But don't you think you would assign somebody, like you were the person that's allowed to go look for our IP on the dark web?
I think that's probably something you should hire a contractor for who's well versed in the workings of the dark web.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Be careful of snake oil salesmen though.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to find somebody who's legit. I mean, if you can always reach out and ask people, hey, is my stuff on the dark web? Probably more than likely it is. If there's been any kind of breaches, you know, people using their company's emails and they got breached in like Ashley Madison or what have you. So,
I mean, emails are just going to be out there. I think they were just worried about like the Coca-Cola recipe like that. Not necessarily emails, because I don't think you can really protect against that.
Well, a lot of times email addresses are actual logins. So if you have a company email address on a social network site as a login, you might have that same login and password into the company for that person.
Right.
Yep. That's the scary part.
So yeah,
that should be in everyone's training, right?
Exactly.
So don't use company email addresses for social media login.
It's so easy though, especially since people use their work devices for personal use at work, you know.
You sound like you're an example of someone who has done that.
Oh, I've done it quite a bit at my old company.
Really? I've never done that.
Punch yourself in the stomach.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
I have separated myself out. I'm literally like personal private. I don't even log into email on my work box. So, all right. So this was a great article. It was a great GitHub discussion and graphic. You should definitely check that out. And you know, maybe you can look at it in your environment and use it as a presentation, you know, piece for your own work, you know. So, all right. Well, unless something of massive value happens, I think this is going to be the last show that we're going to have of 2017.
No.
Wow. Don't get too excited, people. I'm going to miss all y'all. We're going to have planning meetings. We got some stuff going on in 2018.
You won't miss us. We'll be here still.
Yeah. We'll be on our Slack. But we've got some things we're looking at, some things that we might want to change a little bit. Not too much. I think
we're taking listener suggestions.
We are always taking listener suggestions. Matter of fact,
wait a minute. You started on this podcast a year ago.
I did. It's almost my 1 year anniversary.
I know, right?
It was like yesterday.
Back in my day.
You young punks. Yeah. I think the term Yoko was pushed around at some point there in the early.
I quit. No. This is my last one.
No, don't do that.
That's it.
No, you don't get a severance package. Anyway.
Fine.
I want to get the communication stuff out of the way. So Miss Berlin, if people wanted to get a hold of you to talk about your O'Reilly training coming up that they're going to accept, or you know, anything else, how would they go about getting a hold of you?
On Twitter or Slack at InfoSister, InfoSystir.
Right on. Mr. Betcher, the same for you. How would they get a hold
of you? Betcher Pwned.
Betcher Pwned. You're not on Slack with us, so it's a rare moment when he pokes his head out of his cube and he posts on Slack. I love it because I make sure I mention that. I'm like, oh my God, he's on Slack. And then he disappears again. He disappears for weeks at a time.
Swarm.
he mostly hangs out in the malware and reverse engineering channel because him and Mr. Goff have a thing about malware. They like finding it anyway. So you can follow the show at BrakeSec on Twitter, BrakeSec. You can follow me, Brian Brake, at Brian Brake, BryanBrake. So our Slack channel, the bot died on it. Actually, they put it into retirement. So what we're doing now is we have a Bitly link, a custom Bitly link. If you want to join our Slack, we're quite active on there. We are available in the show notes, but you can go to breaksec.com/, and it's DEC 2017 break Slack, and it's in the show notes. Unfortunately, it's case sensitive. That's how Bitly does things. I don't know why, but
you could just go to breaksec.com too, right?
No, breaksec.com doesn't exist except as a Bitly link. So I know, right?
So it is a large community. If you have a security question, chances are out of all those people, somebody's going to know the answer if it's a security related question. I mean, there are a ton of people on there.
We got a lot of people.
And it's nicely divided into topics as well.
That's right.
But you can go to the hallway con and call things out.
We have a lot of tracks, GRC, IoT and mobile. We have a job board, which has been very active recently. We have network security, logging. OSINT. Yeah. Logging and SIM.
Secret Santa.
Oh, Secret Santa. Speaking of which, how's the Secret Santa going?
Oh, so I suck at coding in general.
No.
Okay.
No.
So I've been struggling to learn for like 5 years. And this has been my third Python project.
Mm-hmm.
Very proud of it. I did not write all of it, obviously, as most projects go. I stole somebody else's and added to it. So I found the Secret Santa Python script that would randomize names and email addresses and send out an email. But I needed to add home address and handle, right? And then like randomize all the people and send out this big long custom email. So I kind of messed it up a little bit, but so I need to figure out better logic and error handling and stuff for next year.
Okay.
But yeah, it worked out in the end. I only had to do, you know, a handful of manual emails, but overall there were 185 people and 18 countries.
Dog. That's crazy. And that's up from like 50 last year, right?
Last year was like 50. It was insane. I actually broke it up into four different geographical locations this year.
Nice. Very nice.
So hopefully nobody messes it up.
Okay.
And everybody gets a gift.
I sent mine off of somebody who lives in the middle of America. And I hope that they enjoy their stuff. I actually got something for them and the kids to do together. So
he's very cool.
He got some daughters, so I got him some stuff that'll they have to solder and learn how to solder. But it seems like he knows his way around a soldering gun, so he should be all right. So I tried to send him beer, but apparently it gets flat if it bumps around too much. Weird. So yeah. I did not send him beer from the Pacific Northwest. All right, so I don't know if any of you have been on Twitter, but Patreon, we use it as a tip jar. So if you get value from the show, and we appreciate you if you get value from the show, we normally ask you to, drop a buck or two in there for, the show. And it's like we charge you per month. But Patreon has decided that they're going to try to double dip and take money and make people, get charged more for supporting people, and then they're going to get us on the back end as well for us creators. So if you were to donate like $1 to our show, you were actually going to get charged like $1.37, which is almost a 40%.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, either you pay more money so that you don't have to get charged as much, but then that defeats the purpose of, supporting at whatever level you feel comfortable doing. So I said, screw it, and we're not going to do Patreon anymore, because it's also a pain in the ass with regards to like signing up for the classes, because I had to like charge people over a 2-month period. And, like the last class we had with Tyler Hudak, our reverse engineering course, it was like $50 for 1 month and $50 next month. And that just didn't make any sense. And then people wouldn't go back in and unsubscribe at that level. So they got charged yet again, which I felt bad about. So we have a PayPal account. If you want to put a buck or two out or do like a recurring thing, it's in the show notes on how to do that. And I put it in the hallway con today for our meeting. It's paypal.me/BDS podcast. You can do a recurring payment of, a buck if you want to do that. Or you can do like, one of our guys was like, can I do a yearly thing? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess you can drop a yearly thing. I don't, if you want to put in $5 times 12, that's $60. You don't get charged any fees though, from what I gathered. I've actually sent myself money from my personal PayPal account to this. I didn't get charged anything, which is what I don't want. I don't want you guys have to pay fees on top of, trying to support us. That's stupid. So if you get, if you want to give us money, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. paypal.me/BDS podcast. It's in the show notes as well. I'm going to remove the Patreon. If you are a Patreon member, please cancel.
Now, will we have to do anything? Because I donate to the show as well.
Will I have to
go in there and cancel it, or will you cancel it for us?
Well, the only way for me to cancel it is to block you.
Are you going to do that, or do
I don't want to block people? Because then that means if something, you would have to unsubscribe and cancel or delete your patronage of our show, and then go and add a reoccurring payment,
like a PayPal thing.
Yeah, like a PayPal thing. Yeah, and that's what the PayPal link is for. So I'm sorry we've harped on too long about it, but if you have any questions, just come on the Slack or hit us up on Twitter or whatever. Email bds.podcast@gmail.com if you have any other questions as well. So we're on iTunes, Google Play Store. We just got on Spotify. Oh my God, it's crazy. Everybody's like, oh man, it's about time you got on Spotify. And I was like, yes, I know. Thanks. Libsyn just added us to that. It's in the show notes as well. So that was
like MySpace.
It's like Pandora, but with a fancier icon. So, that was all I have. Thank you so much for listening, to our podcast and our show. Your support means a whole lot. Everybody who's on our Slack, Scott Pack, Dave Sybuck for doing the book club for us.
Are the bomb.
Oh yeah. Him and Scott, we made moderators cause it just got too popular. We needed people to help rein in the monkeys over there. director of InfoSec.
And yes, Brian just called all of you monkeys.
All you InfoSec monkeys. We love y'all. Born Again, InfoSec Sherpa. She's on there quite a bit. Joe Gray. We have people all over the world. Joseph Leroy over there. Andrew Davis got a ton of people.
Is that the Joe Gray that won the
SECTF at Derby? That's right.
Yeah.
Nice. But everybody just makes it so much fun to get up and get on Slack and discuss InfoSec stuff. And it feels like a big 900 people family with no BS there. I'm on it more than I'm on Slack, to be honest now. So, but
you mean Twitter?
What did I say?
Slack. You said Slack.
Crap. I'm on the Slack more than I'm on Twitter. Yes. But yeah, they really make it a joy to be on. So, and thank you to all the other listeners. I mean, we surpassed 600,000 downloads this year.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we are sitting at...
That is crazy.
As of December 7th, we're at 610,000 downloads, and we've still got 20 days left in the year. So I'm hoping we'll get up to at least 630 or 640K this year. So it's awesome. And we couldn't do it without you. You guys are our family and our listeners and
our inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not what Mr. Betcher says, but anyway. So
it seems like we get better every year. I'm really
we're just hitting our stride, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we got a bunch of ideas coming up, some things we're going to be doing, and we hope you enjoy them, but you know, we always appreciate any feedback you can give us. So that was it for the year of 2017. We will be back in 2018. We're going to have some shows. We have some guest podcasts that we're doing with some crossover stuff, but it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be us with some other people and it's just not the same. So, and we have some audio from B-Sides Wellington and HushCon hopefully that, that we'll have. So, but yeah, for 2017, that's it. It's done. Put it in the can and, you know, from the world headquarters here in Seattle, Washington, the Pacific Northwest, the region of Cascadia,
and Norwalk, Ohio,
and outside of a little town called Elgin in Texas. That was it for the 2017 Breaking Down Security season. Everyone have a great holiday season. Have a great year. Please be nice to one another, and we will talk to you again in 2018.
Bye.
Bye.